Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And I think I remember who I am. It's been a rough day. OCO again, Lee Tahiju Tahigu. This is Will Bluewater. I'm fine, and how are you? Our guest tonight is Dr. Jinikwe Medicine Bird. She's a Native American Anishinaabe singer and musician who lives among the Lakota Oyate in South Dakota. She studied music, art, and dance since she was young. And since the end of 2007, she decided to put her skills to work. She likes music, art, education, writing, photography, and film. And we're happy to have her on the program. How are you this evening?
Fine. Thank you.
Well, listen, the first thing I'd like to do is Mark has your birth date, and he'd like to do a reading. And by the way, we have someone else on the line from area code 515, prefix 829. Who's this?
may just be calling in to listen. So we'll let them listen. Oh. They're just calling in to listen. So, Mark, go ahead and take it away. Tell us about Chiniquay.
Okay, well, in the traditional Mayan day count, she was born on a day 2 Simi, which is the second day of the Chacon serpent cycle. And the 2 has to do with balance, polarity, positive, negative, and, you know, all that type of thing. The Simi is both a glyph of death, or more appropriately, transformation. It's one of the biggest problems, difference between some of the Mesoamerican cultures, or actually many Native cultures and Western cultures, is how they view death, because they look at it as a, you know, hit the brick wall and everything's over, game over, whereas the Native thing doesn't really tend to think of it that way. So this is something that, you know, since her birth, also carries, you know, because of the death and transformation and stuff, it carries the thing of connection with elders and bridging and communication across the veil or the dimensions, whatever you want to call it. It's also a lot of times associated with the crystal skulls. So those type of things might have been around her for a long time. It's a white glyph, so it's associated on the Mayan medicine wheel with the direction of the north, which also has to do with ancestors, and most of the Native medicine wheels tend to look at it that way. And so looking the sixth sun, Zulcan, and it's going to give us a little bit more. It'll have the forward flow of time, backward flow of time, and where the two time flows come together and unify. So we'll do the way we look at time normally, the forward flow. And we see in this, Simi is coming up again. So, and it's in the position going forward since birth. So since we're seeing it in both the Zulcans, it probably indicates a pretty significant aspect of her life. But this one adds a little bit of a more wrinkle to it, and that is the thing of service and helping, being in the community and helping around and doing stuff for others, which looks like that's probably been with her for a long time, maybe before she even came here to Earth. it's in a balance cycle, which is one of the new cycles in the new Zulcan. And so, and then it also is a has an aspect of not just balance, but truth. So truth and balance are going to be pretty important things here. And for her, it's not just since birth. It's going to be important pretty much forever. on the backward flow of time, the part we don't see, but you know, our psychic senses or other things can many times tap into, hers is a sun glyph. So this would be something showing up more recently in life. We usually, for most people, we say 1997, 1998, a little bit before or after that, going forward, or backward, how you, depending on how you look at it. And it's indicating, you know, more connection with the sun, yellow, so the southern part of the medicine wheel in the Mayan medicine wheel, and brings in an aspect here of teaching, working with others and teaching, especially teaching things about what we talked about before, communities, cooperation, but teaching a little bit, there's a little bit of a twinge or a partnering energy or here of warrior energy, reason, justice, you know, fight, no, not too much fear here. It's also connection into the condor, the eagle and condor prophecy. So she probably may have had a lot of things with not just Native, but maybe things Native a little bit more on the southern flank of the world, maybe is going to be showing up in her life, possibly. That, so I'd look for things down in, you know, South America or anywhere in the southern hemisphere, maybe even southern Central America. And the thing about balance and equalization and stuff is coming up here again. So a big part of probably what she's able to teach on is that, warrior stuff, fighting, courage, fearlessness, justice, things like that, but in a community setting of cooperation. But in the background, there's also an aspect here of spiritual and almost mystical stuff, mystical powers and stuff. This probably connects in back with the ancestors, too. So a lot of times in a reading like this, I would almost say there's a 50-50 chance that the person's been through a near-death experience or a significant out-of-body experience, you know, where they've been to the other side in a big way. So now where these two time flows come together, so this is kind of the balancing or the moving between world cycles. And I will also tap into that aspect of teaching, because as she learns this, she also teaches it too. And that's a lot. It has a lot about instinct, survival, life force, an aspect here of sacred power. And not just any sacred power here. It's going to tie into the underlying power and energy that forms all of our creation. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's been getting or soon to be going to get some more connection into that. Now, in the Lakota tradition, she should go look at and do some little bit of research or talk to some elders and stuff about skon-skon. And if you draw it as a symbol, it'll look like an hourglass, two triangles with their points stuck together, or like two pyramids with their points stuck together. Looks kind of like an hourglass. She should go look at that in the Lakota tradition and see what that symbol means and pretty much learn everything she can. has an aspect here, again, of this balance and the flow of things. And another one she might want to look at is in the Mesoamerican tradition, she might want to look at jaguar. On the jaguar, and then one of their highest totem spirits. And find out and look a little bit about it. And also just watch for jaguar stuff showing up in her life and dreams, or maybe just going somewhere and seeing something. So this particular glyph, it's a Shakan glyph, and it's so it's the serpent, but it's a red glyph. So in the Lakota tradition or the North American Indian tradition, others too would obviously relate to the good red road or path. So it's showing this for her, that this things we've been talking about in terms of skon-skon and jaguar and sacred power and all this, that's going to play a big part on her being on that path. But she probably has a above normal average ability to tune into the other side. Or if she isn't doing it already, she'll probably be doing it pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Lakota, well, actually have a tradition, and I forget the name of it now. It's the one where they wrap up the medicine guy and tie him up on the floor. I forget the name of the ceremony now. It's one of the seven. And that might be another. Huh?
It's Uipi.
Yeah.
Uipi.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one for you to become real familiar with, too. if not, I already had some pretty interesting experiences with it. So. Yeah, I would not be surprised if something's out. Probably something all throughout your life, different things could have been happening along that line, I would say. It's probably been almost a minefield walking around and pop other side of the veil popping in on you.
Well, what do you think? Did he read you like a book or what?
Yeah.
Well, it's a good icebreaker.
Well, It is a good icebreaker, and so awesome. I'm glad somebody did that for me. But yeah, I've been walking a sacred path since I was 4 years old. And several times in my life, I've been sick, and I almost passed away. But each time, something came back. When I was four, I saw the spirit man that. We call him the shadow man. He would stand close to me when I was sick. And then when I got older, he would be appearing places. And I was just really scared of this person, just not a person, but it was like a black shadow of a man. And he would be standing off afar. But it wasn't until I almost died of the measles. I was really sick. I was really sick. And you know what? I knew what death was at 8 because I could feel myself that I was going to go or something. And something was tugging at me. And somehow I got the strength to pull out of it, and I got okay. But after that, I started hearing things. I started hearing voices. And but I never told anybody. I don't want people to think that there was something wrong with me or take me away. That was the biggest fear, to being taken away. And so as I got older and older, things started to happen. I remember the first time I left my body was when I was 12. And I wasn't sick. I was just fell asleep. It was a nighttime thing. And I was in this great city, and it was gold. It was like, I felt like Alice in Wonderland with these great big tall golden cities. And I could feel with my feet, the stone under my feet, it shined like diamonds under it. And I could feel the coolness on my feet. And from there, it just got stronger as I got older. And in my 20s, I thought I was going crazy because I would see things, and it wasn't just dreams. It was just like it was kind of like seeing in grayscale, kind of, because I could see things, and I got stronger. What it is or whatever, but I didn't know how to handle it. And then my walk, I was working a job. I was in the government, and I was a soldier, and I was a police officer. But I just wanted to leave all that behind. I had three kids to raise, and it was kind of a dangerous area for my kids to be. And that's all I did, was worry about my children. And I wanted to go home up to my mother's reservation, but I didn't feel comfortable there. I didn't want my kids to experience a really bad oppression then, back in the early 70s up there, before they got casinos and the resort and businesses and whatever. We were really, really poor people. So I heard about the Sundance and whatever, so I came out to South Dakota for Sundance, and we just stayed there. I stayed there 24 years, and my kids went to school, and they grew up, but I know all the ceremonies and all those things. And so my journey, spiritual-wise, I know myself. That's why I call myself Wichakwiwin, because I do numbers. And I didn't know numbers, like sacred geometry, until I was working on my doctorate, because I'm really good at statistics. And I started delving into sacred geometry, and I found a connection, and there is like a connection. It's kind of like a roadmap that people that in the past left behind, because all the spiritual books or whatever kind of refer to different types of numbers or symbols or whatever. And so my name, actually, if you count up the numbers and whatever, means five, which is a star. In sacred geometry, I'm a star. And I'm really spiritually in tune. I've been back and forth to the spirit. Well, actually, in 2009, I think it comes through illness or something. I have sleep apnea. And 2009, I went to sleep. And I almost didn't wake up or whatever, but it was a spirit woman that came, and I sing about her. And I just wrote a song, and I'm going to sing it over at Trouble Vision this weekend. And it's called, I think it's called Our Lady, or, it's called Our Lady. And I'm going to sing it, and it's about her, how she came to me, and she saved my life. She came with a, it was more than an apparition, because I remember kind of being awake but not being able to move. And she came, and she floated through the door, and she was this, and she got bigger and bigger as she walked towards me, and she was so beautiful. She had hair almost down to her feet. And when she walked, the wind blew through her, and she was barefoot. And then she walked closer and closer, and I was just mesmerized by her because she was so beautiful. And she was blue, and she sparkled like diamonds, her eyes, her skin. And then she knelt above my body, and she looked at me from side to side at my face. And then my eyes were open looking at her, and I was just like caught, mesmerized. And she reached down and she put her hand over my face, and then I gasped for air, and I just flew right off the bed and nearly fell on the floor. And she, so I sing about her in one of my songs, a new song that I wrote. But yeah, I'm really, I know that there is another side. A lot of people don't get the gifts that I was been giving. I mean, I don't call sickness as a gift. But the gift that came out of that, the spirit gift that came out of it, makes me appreciate life more. And so I use that as far as a singing. And my spiritual things are kind of like, they're kind of like private or whatever. But if somebody wants me to pray for them, I will. But sometimes. If I see somebody in trouble, I will tell them, but I'm not allowed to go beyond the natural law. And that's spirit ceremony. It's kind of in the Lakota tradition, it's kind of private. It's kind of, they wanted to not really put it out there, you know, to talk about it too much, just that we do practice the traditions of the Lakota. And I usually don't talk about these things in public, you know, but it's a strong, when you go through all the ceremonies and when you live a Lakota life, and I learned to live a Lakota life, but I can speak Anishinaabe too. I sing in Anishinaabe, sing in Lakota, even sing in Sanskrit, and I learned a little bit Tibetan. And so my life has been like an open book, like something experience I knew. I had dreams of the Buddha. I really freaked Rinpoche's out because I told the life of the Buddha and whatever, and they thought I was lying. And then just certain things. I was really sick last 2 years ago, and I went down to Santa Fe because right now I live in Colorado, so I can go either South Dakota 6 hours or down to Santa Fe. And I went down to Santa Fe. And I went into the ashram, to the Hanuman ashram, and the first time I went in there, and I didn't know who Baba Anim Korori was. He was like actually a Hindu healer from India, but this ashram came, I think there's only two in the United States, the Hanuman ashram. And so I didn't know about Hanuman in the story, the Hindu story about the Hanuman, or the connection between Buddha and Hindu. And I studied those. And first time I went in there, I sat down here by my Sani, my man friend, and he, and I said, "Do you realize you're sitting down here praying to a, this is a monkey god?" And I tried to keep my composure and just not say anything or whatever, because I don't understand. And so I did, and then we left, and here I got really sick, I think 4 or 5 months later, and I just didn't know how. I was praying to everybody because I was so miserable, and so I had Baba's picture, and I brought it back, and I said, "I'm going to learn everything I know about this Baba. I wonder why they have an ashram towards him. I don't know nothing about Hindu." So I was reading a little bit about him and all that, and how he was a healer. I mean, he was a really strong healer in India, and he lived just a compassionate, simple life, barefoot, with just a sari on or whatever. And so I learned about him or whatever. But when I got sick, I went to sleep one night, and I had a vision of him, and in that vision he appeared to me, and he kind of, I don't know if you know what a hiyoka is. Hiyoka is like a contrary. They do the opposite. Well, anyways, he was above my head, and he was had this white sari in which he usually dresses it, and he shook his finger in front of me like, no, no, or something like that. And I kept thinking about it, whatever, and then when I woke up, I remembered that dream, and it was so that I was doing something wrong, but I didn't understand what. And he came to not only heal me, but he also to make a little warning of how I should pay attention. And I guess I wasn't paying attention to what I was eating or what I was consuming because I have to eat a certain way. And I think I was overdoing it with the alternatives or whatever because I was eating a certain way and taking alternatives, and some of them weren't really good for me. So when I found all this out and whatever, that's when I started walking towards, when he said balance. I know what balance is because I walk that fine line of balance all the time because sometimes I overthink or whatever. But so the next time I went to the ashram down there in Taos, I talked to this man, Punya, and he's one of the board of directors for the ashram. And I talked to him, and I told him my dream about the Baba. And so he sat there intently, and then he said that he had been up to South Dakota, and he sundanced. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah. And I said, oh, that is so cool. And he took me into this little store or whatever, and he let me pick out all these books or whatever because I didn't have money to see about these books to learn about Baba's life or anything. And he just like gifted me, and I was like, wow, that is so awesome. And but that's my walk towards there. But I am a visionary, and I never know when it's going to happen. Sometimes I see people that are not there, that are from the other side, come back this way. The most prolific apparition that I saw one time was 4 months before I found out that my husband had cancer, 4-stage cancer. And she came, and she was like a spirit helper to this medicine man. And she came, and she touched me. She hugged me. She was warmer than the ones that were alive. And I was like, and I thought they were all playing a joke on me. You guys had to see her. She was right there. She went in the lodge. She's singing, but she never came in the house. When I asked about her, they said, who? And I couldn't believe that they didn't see her too or hear her, or because she was just like real, like any other person that you greet and that you meet. And so the medicine man finally told him, and he said, oh, that's probably one of my spirit helpers. I have two women spirit helpers. And I was like, oh, okay, that was really cool. And it was her that helped me, I think, helped me to hang on when death did happen, and to know that in spirit and the gifts that I have got, I have to have faith in those gifts because there is a real side to the things that I've experienced in my life, especially the spirit side. And we're just a breath away. You're not way far out in space, or, you know, heaven ain't whatever it is, heaven, Brahma, wherever it is, this universal creator is just a breath away. It's just right in front of you, but not too many people can see it. And it's really... And it's really a gift. I always thank Creator for life or whatever. And also the gift of birth. I was there for birth and the gift of death. And it is a gift to watch somebody go from here to there. And I got it. I made myself think about that when it did happen. And so I had that experience. But one thing that that's really strong with me is that I passed through the veil seeing that some people go through the veil of forgetfulness from birth, but I didn't. I remember being born. I remember falling from a place and seeing the dew on the trees before I was born. And then after, I remember being fed these glass bottles of milk, and then being, my sister was being mean to me or something, pinched me or something. I remember being a baby, a small child. And so there was something to that, you know, something to that. I don't know why. I had this dream before. I'm not sure if it's a dream or a memory, because sometimes, you know, some people can't figure out, is it a vision? Is it a dream? How do you know? And so I had this, I think it's a dream or a memory, but I remember being someplace else before I got here. I remember being in a celestial place, and I thought I was it, like I was a spoiled entity. I wasn't an angel. I don't think I was an angel, but I was something. And then I came here, and I said, you know how some people say, well, they have a choice to come here? I don't think I had a choice to come here. I think I was sent here because I thought I was all it, and I had to learn. And so that's been with me all my life, to be humble, to find compassion in that we are all equal. And that was the lesson, that we are all connected and we're all equal in this life. And when we're all, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, like we all come from that same flame. Creator left a little piece of him in each one of us, and we're all related to that same flame, that same creator. And a lot of people can't understand that. But anyways, I see miracles all the time, especially in nature. I have stories to tell about nature, how I became a tree. I once went out in Pine Ridge. I was lonely. My kids were in school, and I was out in the middle of nowhere. And I went, and I fell asleep against a tree, and I got sucked in, and I became the tree. And I tell that story around the fire sometimes. I got a lot of stories to tell, and about being a tree. So we're the life force in everything has a song, has a memory. They don't have the same consciousness as we do. They don't have a brain like we do. But their consciousness flows nevertheless just up and down, just like us, except their trees are more pure because they haven't been spoiled yet by the earthy life of choice between conscious, negative, positive, or dark, or light. They have a pure consciousness of love, and it's and when you hear a tree sing, it's really beautiful. And now scientists are coming up all with this research. Oh, we discovered that plants are sentient beings now, and trees are sentient beings. And I was like, I knew that. I think all natives know that everything in nature has a spirit. You know, and they are sentient, but sometimes we have to use them. But in like Anishinaabe, our language, there's animate and inanimate, things that are alive and things that are not alive. But food is alive, and so that's how we regard our food. And I sometimes keep sage by the stove, and I smudge when I eat or if I'm going to use the stove. And so I keep those ways with me. I live now in a town, but I still sit on the floor, and I still practice those ways that were taught to me. And the hardest lesson I think I found on Pine Ridge was learning acceptance, learning patience and no expectation. That's the biggest lesson I had to learn is just to accept things for what they are. And I never thought I was poor. I lived 7 years in a one-room house over there in Pine Ridge. I never thought I was poor. I just thought I was the richest person because I was living close to the earth and in the simpleness and that we had. We had to cut our own wood and get our own water. But We did it 7 years. But anyways, so sometimes I'll write in my music about these things. I grew up in Michigan, in the lower part of Michigan. I was probably the children of a relocation base, and so my parents came down and they worked in a city, and so I lived in lower Michigan and went to school there. And I think in my, I think early high school, 7th, 8th grade, I got exposed to Eastern religions. And it was there that I met Maharishi Mahesh, the Transcendental Meditation Guru, who turns out to be the Beatles Guru years later, which I didn't know until after he passed away. And then I didn't know that he was their guru or anything. I just remembered him coming to school, and he was teaching us Transcendental Meditation. But those things along my path were all good teachings and led me to the path that I kind of lead now. And so sometimes when I see other Hindu people, I like to sing. I like to join in and sing kirtan. I like to sing Buddhist mantras. And it's something for me, I know everybody probably doesn't experience it, but for me, singing the mantras, knowing about one of my teachers was Thich Nhat Hanh. And Thich Nhat Hanh, I was fortunate enough to go see him before he got a stroke. He is one of the most humblest people I have ever met in my life. And I was so grateful to have met him, to be at a retreat, and to be given a name. I had to drink some water. I talk too much. Hey.
It's okay. I know you had. I did.
Here's an idea for you, because earlier you mentioned the sacred geometry.
Uh huh.
So do you know? Have you? I will assume you've seen a Sri Yantra mandala.
The what? Mandala?
Sri Sri Yantra mandala. It's considered the mother mandala of all the mandalas. It looks like a bunch of interlocking triangles.
Yeah. And then even in the Bible they have sacred geometry. In all the sacred books they have.
Well, what you might want to do sometime is consider how that particular mandala relates and is built out of the Lakota Skanskan. That might be an interesting, if you haven't already kind of thought of along those lines, it might be something interesting might happen if you work on that.
Something did happen to me when I was before I got here, about 2 or 3 years ago. I kept dreaming about, I think I was working with numbers too much or something. I had to fill up my time with something. I write sometimes for professional people, journals, or I was reviewing grants or whatever, but the math thing was stuck in my head. So anyways, I started dreaming about sacred geometry, and I could see, I was ready to do this drawing on my ceiling. Maybe I was supposed to put it on my ceiling, because they say that if you have pictures, if you have drawing or something, just kind of like the petroglyphs on rocks or whatever, then maybe they will manifest something that needs to be opened up or to tell you something. And anyway, so I dreamed about this sacred geometry, and it was kind of like a, what do you call it? It was a star. Star.
Dark tetrahedron?
Tetrahedron, yeah. It was a tetrahedron.
Mm-hmm.
So it went from there to tetrahedron, and then I actually did paint a 56 lotus petal on my ceiling, because 56 had a significance and whatever in the lotus flower. In Buddha religion, too, they have sacred geometry, too. So I So I was going to put the side on the ceiling. And so I was like, well, what has this got to do with anything, this tetrahedron? And so I started researching that. I researched Chris and his work with drawing mandalas and sacred geometry. And then I was on the computer trying to figure out these little symbols that I had in numbers. I said, well, okay, something's trying to tell me to understand that, so I might as well be researching it. And so I did a little research, and I said, well, I'm going to, you know, like, I'm going to think Indian. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to think Indian, and I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to take 4 days, and anything that in my, because I'm an Indian and I'm a nature person, I'm gonna count whatever is significant that's before me in my life that comes to me in each of these days, and I'm going to count, and then I'm going to write the number down for 4 days, and then I'm going to come out with a kind of like a formula or whatever. So what happened was is that those 4 days, the numbers did end up being 56. And so was I counting birds? I'm really close to birds. And so I was counting birds. They were coming by me in my immediate area. And then I figured out 56. So I made this kind of drawing. It kind of looks like a tetrahedron, but not quite, because it was in a octagon or something. So I drew it out and did a formula. Well, I was like, well, what does this all mean? And maybe they think maybe I have to figure it out. Maybe it'd be easy for me. I was like, I'm not that smart. Spirit, excuse me, I'm not that smart. Anyways, so I drew it out, and I just left it alone. And I went back, and I think a week later, and I was on a computer, and I said, okay, I'm going to do the numbers again and figure this out or whatever. And I got up out of my chair, nearly spilled my coffee, and I hit a button on that computer, and I went to this site that was Japanese. And I was so astounded that the thing that I had dreamed about, the sacred geometry or the formula, was right there. And I was like, how coincidental is this? This is so cool. So I learned about it. Well, these Japanese people used to use sacred geometry too back in the old days. And when they couldn't figure out particular, they were great mathematicians. And when they couldn't figure out something, they would do these symbols, the sacred geometry symbols, and they would put it on the left side of the door, on the outside of their door, and they would figure maybe something out there would figure out what it was or whatever, and maybe they would learn from it or it'll come to them. And so there was my symbol. So it went back to there. So what I found out, and one thing led to another, whatever, was that this tetrahedron, you know, on the petroglyphs, the Indians used to make pictures, I don't know, ancient petroglyphs, whatever. It looked like a person sitting inside a spaceship. And actually, that's what it all boiled down to. It looked like that petroglyph, somebody sitting inside all this computations, all this mathematical stuff, sacred geometry, and it boiled down to this drawing of somebody sitting in kind of like a spaceship. And what it was is that it wasn't an actual spaceship. It was a way to transform your consciousness into the other world, the other dimensions or whatever. And so that's where it went. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. All right, that was a good path. Now, what do I do with this now? So it's kind of left there right now. But what a journey. It was awesome.
Well, you know that the tetrahedron, it's the only one of the Platonic solids in sacred geometry. There's five of them. The tetrahedron is the first one. It's the only one where its dual or its inverse is the same as itself. The rest of them look different, but it basically makes itself. But remember what I said about the sconscon and two interlocking triangles? Or two triangles that point to? You can make those triangles three-dimensional, and they'll be a tetrahedron. So you can take that star tetrahedron, again, go back, look how the star tetrahedron relates to Lakota Skanskan and how that relates to the Sri Yantra Mandala. all those things, how they connect together, and it'll connect into Lakota tradition with Skanskan. S-K-A-N.
It's amazing the stuff that Mark knows.
Well, no, actually, that part of I remember when I first saw the thing on the Lakota and the Skanskan, I go, oh my God, they've got that? They know that? Well, I knew immediately the moment I saw it, I knew what was going on, and they didn't spell it all out, but I knew. So I was pretty impressed when I saw it. I go, wow, these guys are a little bit more advanced than I thought.
Yeah. Well, I got something else to tell you, and that is that I had a beaded belt it was on my loom for like since 1995, and I finally finished it this year. Anyways, that design is different colors of triangles with the points with each other, and what that means is just simple: what is above is below. So I do this teaching story about what is below, what is above, and what is below. What is above is the mirror to what's below. And we, as human beings, are the mirror to the universe. Everything in the universe is mirrored in us. And I tell them a story, and I learned that long time ago when I did a medicine walk. One time, I did 7 miles in the winter down in Pine Ridge with my daughter. We carried a pipe because my grandmother never rode in a car. She would walk. And for this woman that used to walk the ceremony. So we walked. And when I learned on that walk, and I had ice all over my hair and everything the time I got to town, was that our bodies are the mirror to all the directions, to all the elements, and if you spend enough time alone by yourself in nature, actually nature is the biggest teacher that you can have. And so what I learned is that, you know, like our eyes and our ears and our body, if you can remember the directions by just your body, your head's in the north, and it symbolizes wisdom, and your left hand. Not too many people eat with their left hand. Most, like a lot of people, eat with the right. But your left hand, the side of your heart, is introspection. And when you remember the left side of your body, you remember introspection, your heart, which is in the west. And then the right hand, which feeds you, is the east. And when you eat and when you cut with a knife, it's that balance between life and death. You could either, if you don't eat, you're going to die. So there's that balance from the east, which is life. And then your feet. And a lot of people kind of walk really hard and they stomp around and with their feet or whatever. But if you walk humbly on the earth, you know, watch your step and how you walk, you would see that we're as human beings supposed to walk humbly on this Mother Earth, which is alive. And so our feet point are in the south. So when we think about our feet being in the south, well, what's the south significance? The south significance is that Milky Way, that spirit path of the ancestors, and even our ancestors, Anishinaabe ancestors, their feet all point south, which is kind of cool. And our eyes are, they say our eyes are windows to the world. Well, they are. They're windows. Your eyes can see the stars, you know, and the stars reflect back to us and gives us light. And that's how you can see your eyes or the ears. The ears are really cool because the ears are the first things that develop before it becomes embryo. The ears are the first to develop before the brain, the ears. So there's a reason for that. Listening, hearing, is a great gift to have. Some people aren't born with it, but they use their other senses to compensate for that hearing. So if we learn to listen, and that's a big issue with us, especially with our perceptions that go through our mind all the time, making decisions and all that, is that sometimes our ears play tricks on us. Sometimes they go along with that perception, you know, if it's wrong perception, whatever, we might hear the wrong thing and judge what we heard when it's really, in fact, not what you really heard. And so when you think about your body, it is a reflection, and we are the reflection of the universe. And so when I made my belt, that's why I made my belt, the two points that point together. What's above is below. So anyways, I really had a really nice chat with you guys. You know, we didn't talk too much about the music. But then again, I got you my doctorate with the music.
Yeah, it's great. We do have a little, you know, if you need to run, we can run, but we still have time.
Yeah, that'd be cool, yeah. Well,
there's one other thing. Remember I said the sconscon thing? There's another Lakota word that you might want to look at. It's I forget the pronunciation. It's like Kapimni or something like that. It's a K-A-P-E-M-N-I. And the K and the P in written Lakota, they usually put a little line over the top of it. That's a word.
K-A-P-M-N-I?
K-A-P-E-M-N-I. And the K and the P have a little line over them on the top. And that word, it relates to your two triangles with their tops pointing to each other, you know, one pointing down, one pointing up. And that word will relate to those, but it will also relate if you look at it, and then you look at the Russian research on torsion and Kozyrev, he was in the 1950s, Russian, K-O-Z-Y-R-E-V, I believe, and torsion. So if you look up Russians and torsion, T-R-O-S-I-O-N, and you look how that relates to that Lakota word and the sconscon and your triangle symbols and your tetrahedron, you'll discover a lot. Some of you probably already know.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. I once wrote a paper, whatever, and I was like, went through all this college and had a tough time just finishing. But when I went through, when I graduated, I actually flunked my oral comps. And they said I couldn't go on to my dissertation. That was it. I thought I was done. But I fought it. And what happened was that I got a head injury. And I didn't know that I had this 7 to 10 minute some cues within the 7 to 10, I think there's like 3 cues that I missed in my own environment, and that my speech too was affected by this. And so what happened was that the brain and the speech sometimes don't work together if I'm really stressed too or whatever. So I flunked my oral comps, but I fought for it, and I fought for it to the South Dakota rehabilitation people that, the laws about
vocational rehabilitation, right?
Yeah. And so I got the vet people to help me, and then I also got the state of South Dakota lawyer, and within 1 week, I had to describe seeing that you have this issue and why you can't get through your oral comps, what are you going to do about your dissertation? Where are your accommodations? And so what I did was I learned how to just keep it simple. I just had 7 little 3x5 cards, and it just put a couple words on each one. And then I went and I learned how to talk better or communicate better through Cecile Firethunder, who was deaf, and she was actually, the tribal president at one time. And she spent like a day with, some time with me, and she told me, you know, I'm going to be apprehensive, whatever. If I have this spirit issue going on, I'm going to be like that. I'm gonna start stuttering, or I'll forget. And so she told me what to do. So what I did was I trained myself how to communicate better with the people that kind of to me were really above their level. I mean, I'm trying to defend a dissertation or a study that has to do with Native Americans, which they could not possibly understand, and in especially in research. So to defend my dissertation, I had to get one top up so that I could defend it adequately. And actually, I had a hard time even forming a committee, people that really understood Native Americans, or because we are just a small percentage in research still as Native Americans. So I had to really toughen up to defend my dissertation. So I had accommodations, and then the day came or whatever, and I said, no, I'm going to breathe. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to take life just like it is. Like remember how I used to live on the prairie? I'm just going to calm myself and whatever. And I was relaxed when I did it. But I had my husband at the time stand there in case they tried to get pushy with me or whatever. And one of the accommodations is that only one person can talk at a time. So it just took 20 minutes. And they said, congratulations. And I was like, whoa, that is so cool. But I never gave talks yet based on, I don't call myself, I don't like to tell people that I'm disabled that way or whatever, because I don't want to lose credibility. And as a PhD, as a doctor. But I remind people, have you ever see that movie, Beautiful Mind, or 50 First Dates?
Yep.
I said, that's me. And I said, well, you talk fine. You don't see nothing wrong with you. And I said, that's because I had to relearn language like music. And one thing I learned is that in Anishinaabe way, in the language, it's a flowing, it's alive. And the language has to flow like the wind on the grass. And when I learned that language flows like music, that's how I learned to re-communicate. So that's how come I haven't shut up in this last hour. It's been flowing anyways. So that's how I had to communicate. And they told me that one day that I might lose my voice altogether. And that is why I sing. I sing because I have to rehearse language every day. And if I don't rehearse language every day, then and like if I went without a week, that my brain will tell me to maybe eventually to stop talking. It's the communication between the brain and your voice. So I sing every single day, and I try to talk or read out loud every single day. And
that's
when
good.
I don't,
that'll help rewire your brain.
Yeah. You can tell when I haven't read or haven't sang or whatever. You can tell in my voice. But anyways, it's been really a nice challenge. And I tell people, I say, like, if you got a disability, and I was born with spina bifida too, you got to keep going. I used to mentor a young teenager who has the same condition as me. Like, she was born like spina bifida and all these problems, and she just lost hope, and she ended up in a wheelchair. And so but her mom was trying to get her to walk again and try to get her interested in something. And I didn't know what to say to her because it's been already too long for her. And she's been conditioned by her own thinking of how to be. But I just kept giving her hope, look, you can train your body, you can train your mind. It comes from the mind first. to do something if you really want it, if you really want to change or do something. And me, I keep going. I exercise, I dance, I do music because I have to keep going. And it's just a part of survival, too, you know, to keep on going. And so, like, I'm not going to be one of those old ladies in that wheelchair.
That's
I'm going to keep going.
That's right. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and you sent me a friend request, and I missed it, and I was looking for you, but we did get connected, and I saw that you put up a link to the show. But thank you so much,
both of them.
And we definitely will.
Yeah.
Won't be strangers.
And, this weekend at Trouble Vision. This is my third year at Trouble Vision, and I'm not shy on stage. I've been, like, singing since I was little, so I'm not really shy. I'll bring everybody up there, and we create, like, a Trouble Vision band. I mean, and we have a great time camping with just anybody. It's like people – there's other natives there and other people from other places, but we have a good time. It's going to be in Peonia, and I put that on my Facebook, too, about Trouble Vision, and – And then I was really surprised that I got asked to perform at Unify Fest, which is really big. It's in outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And that, too, is unifying people, unifying tribes. And it's all about sustainability, how to grow. A lot of people are now into sustainability with food, and that's kind of what I'm into too, because my diet is really limited. It is at how to eat in a good way that's good for your body, and a lot of stuff that you buy now, especially the GMOs, are making people sick. So that's what I do too, is I try to learn all I can about plants and foods that we are eating. So a lot of things that we're doing, like I kind of support people that do sustainability. Unify Fest, I think some of their proceeds go to other projects. So does Tribal Vision. They support other projects that do sustainability and try to find people that are working with solar power or sustainable housing, that sort of thing. And it's really cool. I wish you could bring it back up to Pine Ridge. That's what we need, is sustainable housing, so that people can learn, live back on their ancestral allotted homes instead of the housing areas. And it's a great time. I grew up in a city as a kid, but I also grew up outside. And I love the outdoors, even though I have a lot of allergies, but I've learned to live with it, and so I'm learning around here. I'm in between Santa Fe, and now I'm in between South Dakota, and it's a great experience. I spent a lot of years on Pine Ridge. My kids grew up and left and went in all directions, and then when my husband passed away or whatever, I decided that since I'm still young, I'm going to go and experience the world. So that's what I'm doing, experiencing the world. And if anybody could use a good story or something, then I'm here, you know. Since last year, I became actually a great-grandmother. And I'm really kind of proud of that, is that
wow.
I lived long enough to see to be a great-grandma. But I'm still young. So anyways, I would like people to,
well, you're a sweetheart,
YouTube, and listen to my videos. I'm gonna sing I'm developing kind of like a thing, so I'll be right there, and two of them are presets, but I'm gonna do live. So I'm developing something for 30 minutes. Anyways, I have a hard time with remembering songs. Sometimes they just come out of my mouth. But it's a lot of fun going to festivals.
All right.
I'm really interested in the sacred geometry you gave me, and you said Sri Mandala, Sri, give me some ideals.
He may have lost internet connection because his call dropped and he hasn't called back, so I suspect his internet's down or something.
Oh, okay.
But I can't remember what it was.
Did you want to ask me any questions anything?
Beg your pardon?
Did you want to ask any other questions?
I'm sorry, go ahead, repeat
anything?
That. Oh, no, I think we've covered it. Thank you so much for appearing.
You got me going, and I'd be willing to do this again sometime. We could talk about something else.
Sure.
I hope people really appreciated anything that I said, and they want my email address. I think it's online. It's jenaquay3@gmail.com. And
I got a link up to your webstarts.com blog.
Oh, yeah. I have my credits there.
I got a link.
I was in about 5 movies. I was an extra twice, but I was in uniform. I was a cop, and I got stuck on set for this movie. It's called A Woman Named Jackie. And it was with Steve Collins. You remember the dude that plays Heaven Sent, or that one, the father? Well, that he was in that film.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he was a big actor. It was the first time I ran into actors, and he goes, "Would you give me give me a cup of coffee?" I was like, "I'm a police officer. I don't get coffee." was fun. That was the first experience on a set, and then. Yeah, later on, I think I did, what was the first movie I did? I think it was Trail of Tears. It was a documentary with, I think it was Earl Jones. It's on my Webstarts page under credits. Somehow they didn't connect together. I'm still learning a lot of techie stuff with computers. I mean, I remember 20-something years ago, we didn't even have a phone. That's really funny. And I remember the first time that the Pine Ridge got computers, And I was like, and I remember when I was working for the military, they didn't have computers either. We did microfiche stuff. And just a watching time. And how everything progresses is really interesting. So,
what years were you in the service?
I joined the last day of the Vietnam War, May 7th, 1975.
Oh my gosh, so 75.
I was at the actual ceremony. When the Women's Army Corps became regular army in Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and that was a change.
My second wife did her basic there.
Yeah, and from there, I worked for years and years for on and off government jobs in logistics and warehouse stuff like that. And two, I went back to school, and actually, I used my GI Bill for my first bachelor's, which is in criminology. And then when I moved to Pine Ridge, I went back to school, and I got a bachelor's in human services. And then I went on and got a master's in Lakota leadership. And that was really kind of hard for me because I waited till last class to do the math because I was like just had this fear going through me. I'm going to flunk. And I was like, I thought I was going to flunk, last semester. It was just the final thing. And I was like so surprised that I actually got through it. And then I had to, when I did my little thesis, the whole introduction had to be in Lakota, which was really hard. And then I had to speak the Lakota in front of a committee, but I kind of screwed that up. And I had this little lady a community member that was on my, Marie Randall, she's still alive. She's in her 90s. She's really cool over there in from Wembley. She defended me. She stood up because some guy was really questioning me or whatever, and she said, that's my granddaughter. Like, and you're trying to ruin who she is or something like that. And she said, go ahead and keep on talking. And if you have to use any other words, go ahead. So I started speaking Lakota, and then it turned into Anishinaabe, and I got really nervous and ended it with German. And anyway, she's still alive. She's really cool. But I used, there was only one class, and that was my statistics class that got me approved to enter a doctorate program. And I'm so proud of that Master's in Lakota Leadership, because that one class got me to, they honored my degree, and they took that one class and transferred it, and so that's how I got into my doctorate degree. And I don't know how many, there's very few Lakotas or people attending Ogallala Lakota College with a master's that used it to go on to a PhD. So I'm really, really proud of that fact, that it kind of like opened the doors for others. So, okay, you can keep on stepping, you know, use that. You can use that master's to go on. So it's pretty cool.
Well, we're proud of you. And listen, I need to run. So, but
okay.
We will get back together again, okay?
Sure. It was
okay,
nice to... talking
thank
to guys
you so much.
And husband a lot too.
You bet.
Okay. Well,
okay.
I'll see you and
we'll see you again next time.
Come and camp in the cold with us. Okay. Thank you. Bless you.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. Good night. Hey, you bet.
Good night,
everybody. Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they never still in a sacred manner I live to the heavens I in a sacred manner I live. My horses are many, the high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner